anything else I'd like to talk to the members of the committee about a piece of proposed committee legislation, and that was proposed happy hour legislation that we adopted as a committee. I've received several phone calls from folks, and there seems to be some problems with that legislation, so I held off filing that until I wanted to talk to the committee about it again, and I just wanted y'all to ask if that was the will of the committee, that we just delayed filing that legislation until we've all had a chance to review it again and rethink it.
Which one is it?
The happy hour legislation, Walt, that we, that we adopted as a committee bill. I've got some phone calls about it. Have you got any phone calls?
No.
Okay.
Could we have, Mr. Chairman, could we consider having some sort of, I don't know, unofficial work session or just kind of a review session before we
work
on the draft?
The day after tomorrow on Thursday schedule, we have a time to take up the post committee bills to get, so that
okay.
would be a good time.
Yeah.
Maybe we approved that one already.
We did, and I was getting ready to file it, and then I heard several things about the bill that were a little different than the way I had explained it to the committee, so I just felt like I'd let you know about that. And if the committee doesn't mind, we could just hold off till Thursday when we could have a meeting and talk about those issues again.
So, Mr. Chairman, is there a sectional of the draft?
Yeah, no, but I could have
we'll
one
have, We'll have that.
It's not Thursday. Too much trouble. Just have sort of a work session
right.
atmosphere on the draft. Feel comfortable with it.
Yeah, we've got some time on the schedule to do that. Okay, great. We were scheduled to take up House Bill 169 today as a committee bill dealing with workers' compensation issues, but after numerous requests from Alaskans who either opposed or supported the measure, I agreed to pull it from the calendar until everyone had a chance to review it and reach some sort of consensus on how to proceed. There was a $1 million-plus fiscal note from risk management that should be in your packets for the bill. That sent me back a little bit, and I assumed that when we received it, that the committee would appreciate a little more time to consider the measure in light of the fiscal impact before proceeding with the public testimony. We had such short notice on that, though, that I know of at least one person that came to Juneau today to testify, so I'd like to allow those people from out of town to testify on this legislation and offer the committee the opportunity to question them, and thereafter I'd like to just proceed on to House Bill 177 relating to the second injury fund. That's all right with the other members of the committee. At this time, I'd like to take testimony from anybody who's out of town and came to testify on House Bill 169. I'm aware of at least one. Mr. Glorioso?
Yes.
Would you like to come forward and testify? Pull up a chair, and if you could just take your name
sure.
and who you represent for the record.
Sure.
We have these microphones here, and it records it for the transcript of the
certainly.
Meeting.
My name is Robert Glorioso. I'm with the District Council of Vipers, also the President of Laborers Local 341 in Anchorage. And I do appreciate this opportunity to let me at least, you know, give some of my views and hopes that you would agree with me. I'd like to talk to you a little bit today about fringe benefits relating to workers' compensation. Back in 84, before 1984, it was allowable for fringe benefits to be counted when calculating the monies that an injured worker would receive. If and a person made $50,000 or $40,000 for the year, they would count, you know, the fringe benefits on top of that. It would be a larger amount than what the person actually had on the W-2 form. And then after January 1, 1984, the law changed, and it's just plain not fair. I do have, since a year ago, I've been talking to various unions around the state, and I've got a couple thousand signatures that I brought along with me today of people who are in agreeing with myself as far as having those benefits counted when a person gets injured. It's not a union versus non-union issue. I have to stress the point that there are not, just because I represent a union workers, there are companies, Caroon and Black for one, that give seminars to these non-union construction companies that they do the very same thing that union contractors do, in as much as having fringe benefits taken out as far as a pension and health and welfare. And that actually saves them money in the long run by having these kinds of programs in place. And it's actually on the borderline when these fringe benefits portions are counted. We're talking about possibly $50, $60 a week more, and at the end of the week, you know, at the end of the month, if that's $150, $200, that's the difference between either making your house payment and all the necessary things if you have children, or not making it. It's all the money that they make. They don't just make the money on the check, they make all of the money. The whole entire package is to be counted. Now, I'm not going to be putting any fancy talk to any of you. I'm just going to let you know that it's just fair. It's just downright fair to have all of the wages counted that a person makes, not just what's on the check. When a person doesn't get their, for the time that they're injured, let me put it this way, for the time that they're injured, if it's 6 months to a year that they're off, or even 2 months, whatever that time that they are not working for that year, or 6 months, or whatever that time is, at the end of their career, there'll be a gap in service when they come to calculate all the, you know, fringe benefit, all the pension benefits that that person has accumulated. There will be a little chunk missing for the time that he was injured. And so, consequently, he's going to get, or she's going to get a little penalized for that. That's one penalization. But there's no reason why that when that person is injured and then the system to calculate that person's wages are, let's look at the last 2 years of their income, and then divide it and figure out how many dependents you have, which there's no problem with all at all that we have with the way in which that you calculate that. But they should get the benefit of the doubt to get those fringe benefits counted in on those 2 years of wages when they're making those kinds of calculations. We're talking about fairness. That's all we're talking about. We don't want anything more or less, just to be fair. I think a lot of work needs to be done in evaluating how much money insurance companies are making off of the contractors that they insure. I think there's not enough investigations as to what the profit margins are for those. Instead, it goes directly to the working person. And other than these points, I do want to make mention that in your travels, gentlemen, you can ask any working person about, what do you think about, do you think we should count this and that? And every one of them will be in agreement that they would like to have all of their wages counted, not just what's on the W-2 form. We're not talking about $10 or $15, we're talking about maybe up to $200 a month for that particular injured worker. I certainly hope that you will work diligently to see fairness come back where it needs to be. I mean, all we're asking for is a fair shake. That's all. I mean, this is nothing unreasonable, and I would be glad to give these signatures with addresses and dates and the whole nine yards, but because it's not an official hearing, I'm going to hang on to these for one that is. And then I will give them to you, and I've stopped asking for signatures because I've got so many. It's just like, I know that every single union that I've spoken to has responded in a very positive fashion that they would like to see this come to pass. And I want to stress, it's not a union versus non-union issue. It's for every person. One more thing, I know we're talking about compensation today, but it also counts for the unemployment, being that this is a labor meeting, labor commerce meeting here. It's also, when a person gets benefits, the same thing accounts for that as well. When they make $15,000 or $20,000, whatever that little section, whatever that amount of money is, a person that's not counting his fringe benefits has to work that much longer for him and his family to get the maximum amount of dollars. So it's a double-edged sword. It's not specifically just for the compensation, but it's for unemployment compensation as well. And I really appreciate the fact that you have let me talk to you today. Thank you very, very much. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Yeah, are there any questions for members of the committee for Mr. Borio, sir? See no questions, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else from out of town that came here to testify on this and won't be able to testify at a future time? Okay, seeing no other people were going to hold this legislation over.
That's true. If we could, since Mrs. McClintock is here, could we have her come to this vote briefly? A couple questions later on.
If we can have some brief questions, but I really didn't. If we start getting into a lot of other testimony, I think we'd be opening it up quite a bit. Maybe what we ought to do is develop those questions and deal with them in a subcommittee or some other format. The situation is that I think there's an ad hoc group that's having the endorsement of the administration being formed to deal with the overall workers' compensation questions, Representative Furness, and I think they're going to be coming back to us with a proposal for some modifications of this bill or a bill that they're going to request on their own.
That's my understanding.
Right. Okay. Is that acceptable?
Okay.
Then we'll hold 169 over, and we'll proceed to House Bill 177, which is rules by the request of the governor. Is there someone here from the administration to speak on House Bill 177? We held over 169 for future hearings. We took no action on it. I announced to the committee that at the next meeting, we haven't filed the labor and commerce bill that we adopted on the happy hour stuff. We're going to hold that over till Thursday and talk some more about it before we file that. And now we're on 177, which is the second injury fund legislation. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the purpose of this bill is to return to the pre-1981 method of paying the administrative costs, the administrative expenses of the second injury fund out of the fund itself instead of out of the general fund. This, of course, is an employer insurer fund, and the state basically is a caretaker of the monies in that fund. Because of the pipeline impact prior to 1981, the fund's balances went down so low that we were not able to reimburse employers for the SIF claims that they had. So in 1981, new legislation was enacted that changed the method by which the employers contributed to the fund, number one. Number two, they gave a transfusion of about $600,000 from the general fund as far as monies into the second injury fund. And then number three, they said, all right, we'll take the administrative costs and pay that out of the general fund instead of the second injury fund. From that time, the sliding scale has pumped a lot more money into the fund. It's absolutely a solid fund at this time. In fact, we had receipts of over $4 million this last year. The unencumbered balance was, in 1985, over $1 million. It's almost $3 million for FY86. And I think it's well able to now stand its own administrative costs of $123,000. In fact, that's kind of a drop in the bucket compared to what the fund has into it at this point. As in the terms of employers, when we first enacted the 1981 legislation, the employers contributed 6% into the fund. That stayed that way until 1986, and it went down to 5%. 1987, because of the balance in the fund, it went down to 0%. So for all 1987 claims, the employers will not have to contribute anything to the second injury fund until that balance comes down and they'll have to start paying again. But I think the percentage will be pretty low. That's all I have on it. I'll be glad to answer any kind of questions.
Okay, the record should reflect we've been joined by Representative Vouchers and Representative Copeland. And are there any questions from Ms. McClintock?
Representative Furness, one great question. Jack, as I recall, there is an advisory group, basically, forget the name of it, but have they reviewed this and supported the change?
The Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee, you're speaking of the
okay. What would Dick Catton on?
Okay, I don't think that they have. I know that they know about it because I've talked to groups, and in fact, I don't think even any insurers, sometimes I get surprised, but have had any kind of adverse testimony on it. It wasn't, as far as the form of the bill, ever discussed with them because the committee is just starting to meet now. They are aware of it, however. I know that they're aware of it.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chairman, just one question. Now, as I understand, these funds are paid in, they're not state funds.
No, they're monies that employers, through insurers, pay based on the amount of compensation that's paid to an injured worker. They pay a certain percentage.
And so then, you serve as a caretaker of the state.
That's right. It's a dedicated fund. Yeah. And most of the dedicated funds, the administrative costs do come out of that fund. So.
That was the term I was trying to get away.
Right.
Dedicated funds.
Okay.
You're going to do the shout out, Matt. No, but I'm helpful. Okay.
Representative Menard?
As a follow-up on this, I know that this is not the intent of the legislation, but just as a question, and really an answer, not Jackie, but on the secondary fund, who has access to this? I mean, what type of injuries are we looking at? And primarily the one on asbestos. I know the asbestos workers and all this business they're having.
Well, how this fund operates is that if an employer hires a person with a pre-existing impairment or pre-existing disability, whether it's by injury or a congenital, doesn't necessarily have to be an on-the-job injury, and they hire that person with the knowledge that he does have that disability, and the person sustains a greater injury that makes a greater disability, then that employer is eligible to get funding back from the second injury fund after the first 104 weeks of compensation that's paid to that injured worker. So I don't really think that it would be, it's not an asbestosis fund like some states do. It's just for the person that has been hired with previous impairment and his impairment is worse now because of that second injury. And if the employer hired him with that knowledge, then they get reimbursed.
And then what product the employer applies?
Yes, there's a within 100 weeks of the second injury, the insurer or the employer has to notice the second injury fund by notice, and then they get their records together after the 104 weeks if, upon petition and their records, the administrator decides that they are eligible to be reimbursed, then they're reimbursed. If there is a dispute, then they can bring it to the board to decide.
The record should be reflected and joined by Representative Davidson. We're discussing House Bill 177. Are there any further questions of the witness? Thank you, Mr. McClintock. Is there anyone else here to testify regarding this legislation? Representative Collins? I didn't even notice you back. I'm sorry. If you want to pull up your chair and join us.
I'm not very tall. Well, this was a bill. And I had some problems with the bill. And the concern that I had was that the money, I guess I see it as kind of a pool that eventually is available to benefit injured workers in one way or the other. And currently, it's utilized primarily as an incentive to employers to, so an employer will hire someone who's had a previous injury, knowing that if they re-injure themselves after 104 weeks, they'll have some assistance in paying those costs. One of the concerns that I have is that what are the administrative costs and what percentage of the total amount is that?
123.3.
Jackie, why don't you just pull up a chair too, and Virginia, maybe you could just stay with us here.
Okay.
I would have had you sit up here if I knew you were interested. I'm sorry.
The fiscal note that we have on the bill is 123.3. That's broken out like this. Your fund today was the unencumbered balance as of the end of FY86 was 3,091.4. So we're going to percentage that.
I guess the concern that I had was that because it is basically a pool of money that hopefully is available to benefit injured workers in at least one way, I think there are other ways we could benefit injured workers, and I would really hate to see the administrative costs over a period of time grow to a degree that, you know, how those things sometimes happen, that they further erode into the funds. That's one concern that I have, is there should be some limit as to what percentage of that total amount the administrative fees could be. The other interest that I had in this piece of legislation is that I've been contemplating introducing a piece of legislation that would cover some of the concerns that we currently have with people like asbestosis. You know, you're aware that some people who eventually have a diagnosis of cancer, for example, a fellow had a diagnosis of cancer which was attributed to his asbestosis. There was a dispute over who was going to pay for his bills. Naturally, the insurance companies litigated because nobody wanted to pay it because it was a very huge loss, as I understand. And so while the insurance companies litigated, he went through a lot. He lost everything that he had because he was not getting any funding from any sources. And the last time I checked with him, they're in the process of negotiating a settlement, I guess, among the different insurance companies. And he's going to wind up getting something, but it's 2 years later, and he's lost his house and his car and his savings. And what I had hoped to do is to address, perhaps, to, you know, WCCA, and I'll bring it up to the committee if you're interested in pursuing it and doing something, was to perhaps utilize a portion of the second injury fund to cover these people's costs while the litigation occurs so that eventually the insurance company would have to reimburse the fund. You see my point? So I'm real interested in not having anything happen to that fund because I think that as things come along, you know, we have a painter's bill now, And I think we're going to have the same problem with painters, is that after they've been exposed to the fumes over a period of years and then have the last injurious exposure, they're going to wind up in the same boat. Nobody's going to want to pay the bill. And while the insurance companies litigate it, the injured worker sits out unable to work with a lot of medical bills that nobody is paying. So I guess, you know, my concern is that if you are going to allow, you know, this to occur, you know, put a limit on it, and secondly, consider perhaps another use, you know, of the fund, and maybe utilize this bill as a vehicle to do so. I mean, you might address the question, and from your point of view, I remember I had called the Department of Labor when this individual called me in and stated his position, and administratively, you couldn't do anything about it. And also, he just kind of sat out there for 2 years, and I think that's, we need to address that somehow, and I thought this might be really good.
If I could, as far as the administrative costs, I guess I need to look at the amount. The 123.3 is kind of a drop in the bucket compared to what the fund is today. Number one, number two, as far as percentage of the gross, you know, the fund keeps on. It's going to be fluctuating back and forth. I don't see that other than wages going up. There's very few people that are included in that. 75% of one and 8% of another, and there's only about 3 or 4 positions that even have any kind of dealing with the second entry fund as far as costs are concerned. And I don't see those costs going up other than just by inflation. I agree there's a real bad problem that we have with what we call the last injurious exposure rule. I'm not too sure, I appreciate it, I concur that there should be some kind of fund possibly or some kind of thing set up for that, but I'm not too sure that it's under the second injury fund that it should be done. Simply because the second injury fund is there for a specific purpose, and I'm not too sure that you can change that purpose, and probably a lot of you know more than I do about a dedicated fund, but I'm not too sure that we want to do that to the second injury fund. In other words, we leave the second injury fund as it is and possibly look at some other kind of way to take care of last injurious exposure rules, including maybe some new legislation. But I think the ad hoc committee is going to be looking at that.
Representative Furness and Representative Davis.
Yes, sorry. Question is the current balance of the fund?
Yes.
How much is that?
The,
I know she had a chart that
yes,
you don't
it
have.
That, the chart kind of shows you what's happened to the fund in recent years. It was down here to this area. And in fact, if the $600,000 hadn't been pumped into the fund, it would have been about down here. And then this is where the fund is now. And the unencumbered balance is $3,091,000.
You mentioned $600,000. What's the $600,000?
The $600,000 in 1981, the legislature pumped in to the second injury fund to bail it out of the province because it was so broke at that time. As a result, and three things happened. As a result, number one, of the pipeline claims that were made against it. Number two, the method of funding the fund was not adequate. Now, I mean, it was just a set amount that no matter what happened along the way, the same amount was contributed. Now we have a sliding scale that takes care of the boom, it takes care of the bus time. So right now we don't have that many claims against it. If we do have a time when there's a lot of claims, then that sliding scale would go up again.
Well, maybe I'll just follow up. Do you have the figures on the approximate annual draw on the fund? Expenditures out of it?
Yes, in fact, I can get you that information. I don't know if I have as far as, yeah, I can give you.
Just sort of a rough estimate.
If you want to just take the figures from there.
Oh, I see.
Or I can just load that to you. The receipts and the payouts are along the bottom line.
That's interesting. Maybe we'll have to get a copy of this one.
Okay, fine.
Representative Davis. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Collins and Ms. Klingdorf, you both mentioned the need for some kind of interim fund, and it struck me that talking here, litigants fighting one another, it seems to me that rather than allow adversarial types in the private sector to use state money, perhaps the burden of the use of money to cover those people should fall upon the two litigants. And maybe this would, in fact, encourage the litigation to go a little more quickly along. Perhaps you have comment.
Well, I do have a comment. I guess it is money that has been paid by employers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's already money out of the employer's pockets. So since they've already paid that money, and my thought would be that you wouldn't suspend their payment into the fund because we have a lot of money in it, but you would continue it, and you know they continue to pay into that fund, and we'd generate that income to try to help those people in the interim. And so they're not state funds. They're funds that have already been paid into the, you know, the fund by an employer. So it's an employer expense. And I guess my thought was that we have already said it's okay for employers to pay for something, you know, in advance that benefits an injured worker, i.e. the second injury fund. And I guess I don't see that as being any different. And and I think that the way I would see it is that the insurance companies would have to pay. Is whoever was found to be the one responsible, or whoever, or they would reimburse the fund. So that in a sense, the injured worker would be given a loan from the fund to cover his, at least his medical expenses, and to cover some of those things, and then whoever was responsible in the end would reimburse the fund so that the fund wouldn't be depleted, but it would be an opportunity somewhere for those people to go. They have nowhere to go. They can't go to you know, to other sources at all. And you know, they're not getting any money, there are no benefits at all, and they're having these incredible bills that are occurring because they're winding up with things like cancer.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Representative Collins, I did not intend this back for the fund to be paid by the employer. He has made his obligation clear. I guess I'm addressing my comments to the two insurance companies. Is it possible that we could get them involved in making some kind of fund available for these kinds of people in need, and in need longer than perhaps is necessary because of their fighting one another? That's what my concern is.
You might be able to answer that better in terms of what you can compel insurance companies to do. I don't know.
Not much. Yes, that's kind of representative. I don't know of any kind of fund that's ever been set up like that. There are funds that are set up, and I can foresee a fund possibly. I guess what I would like to see is this being referred to the Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee, because it is a problem, along with possibly revamping our law to, instead of a last injury exposure, possibly to an apportionment state, but that's kind of going on from here. But there are funds that are set up in other states that are for, like, uninsureds. Say that an employer runs uninsured, and the employee is hurt, and before you can get the employer, he's long gone out of the state. So a lot of states have formed a fund that is paid by a tax on insurers, and the benefits are paid to that injured worker, and then the Attorney General goes after the employer and tries to seize any kind of assets they can. So, you know, I don't know of a fund like we're talking about. I think it's a good idea. I just don't know how we can form that. I mean, I have no state to borrow from to look at that.
My concern is that we do not, you know, if two people are fighting it out in the court and we're dragging it out, then my concern would be your concern, Representative Collins. That person has need. We have to address those needs. Somebody is responsible for the extended battle, and I just think that perhaps we should pursue this kind of thing if we can.
One thing I might just add, that in the case that Representative Collins is talking about, it wasn't just two. I think there were 12 employers who were finally joined on that case, which leads us kind of to believe, in fact, I think the board just recently put out a decision that maybe we better be looking at an apportionment state. The reason that we went to last injurious exposure in the first place is because it was supposed to be summary, final, and moves, and the last employer on the hook gets it. It's not working that way. Maybe apportionment's a better way to go.
One final comment, if I may. It would seem that, you know, sometimes you can drag things out long enough in an inflationary kind of situation that, you know, and I'm not accusing insurance companies of this, but you know, it's something to maybe think about. If they drag it out long enough, they paid their cost by reinvesting the money that they had. So, yes. Thank you.
Neil has been trying to
tell. Yes, I think that the case presented to us isn't a second injury, but a first injury. And there are many of these sort of things that occur that the effects aren't felt many years later, so that it really is a different problem. And I think we do need to look at this, and I think that we might actually have a hearing on the possibility of organizing a committee bill with Collins' help and looking at funding sources for it. But I think that it isn't just that the questions are severable, but that they miss each other completely, because what we're looking at is the long-term effects of an early exposure or an early injury. It also implies injury, of course.
Which sure. I just wanted to point out to the committee, this is one of those little revenue measures that of some about 20 bills or so that the governor's introduced that are all necessarily to balance the government's projected budget for this year.
This is?
Yeah, it's one of them. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of these little bills that are in, a couple hundred thousand here, a couple hundred thousand there, and we really, this has two more committee referrals in the House alone, and
Chairman, I hate to be here, but I don't understand the comment. Maybe you could.
And the governor's overall budget, it's been formulated based on the passage of a certain number of legislative measures. that add revenue to the general fund, and this one is one of those small revenue-generating measures.
But it doesn't go to the general fund, does it?
It's over that little piece of that pie that says fees and licenses.
Yeah, well, what it does, it frees up $123,000 of general funds. Well, I take them out of the second injury fund.
But I would like to point out that the second injury fund, see, came into being something in 1947, certainly from 1959, to 1981, the administrative costs were paid by the fund, as is in those funds.
We took it out
and
the
because
fund.
It got broke, we picked up the
Yes, I think in the period when we had a lot of money, we tended to pick up the operating costs of a number of these things. I know in the Department of Commerce, of course, license fees bore no relationship to the actual cost of provision of services. The overhead cost of maintaining, let us say, an insurance fund, the insurance company takes it out of the premium, and this is essentially the same, but it's a rather small for the whole thing. So I think we should move the presentation along constipate the community.
Representative Collins?
Well, I guess I have stated my concerns about the bringing the money out of the fund. I'm not objective to the legislation. My concern was if there's any opportunity to address the issue. That is a large amount of money that is available. And what I'm concerned about is that if we do introduce a piece of legislation, if the Workers' Compensation Committee of Alaska works on it, I've talked to them about it already, it's going to be another year or two before that actually happens. And my thought is there are some people now who are in need. And the money is there, to respond to Representative Davis's concern. My thought would be that if an injured worker had to draw from that fund in order to pay at least his medical bills, if nothing else, that whoever wound up being responsible would not only reimburse the fund, but would reimburse it with interest. So there would be a tremendous incentive for them to hurry up and settle it. Right now, there's none. But if they know that they're going to have to pay interest on that money, if they finally get caught or finally have to pay, and that interest rate is high enough, you better believe there's going to be an incentive for them to settle or to do something sooner. And, you know, my concern in these situations is that nothing is happening to move them around or move them about and bring an easy resolution for the injured worker. Now, I know of at least two that this has happened to, and I'm sure there are probably more people. And people are afraid to file this as a workers' comp claim because they don't want to get into all of that, and at least they can, you know, at least have their medical costs covered by their private insurance company, but some of them don't have private insurance. All that I was asking is that the committee look at this as a possible vehicle to do something temporary until we do get some kind of legislation passed, because I think that because of the asbestosis problem, because of the seizures problem, if there's a bill that you're probably going to pass, where do you think the money's going to come from to deal with that? And my thought was this is an opportunity to tap into that fund at least temporarily. And I think if you really wanted to, you could put some sanctions in there so that it wouldn't be abused. And I think the insurance companies or the employers would certainly not be able to take advantage of it if you gave them made them pay a penalty for the use of that fund. And really what it is a loan to the injured worker that would be repaid by the insurance company with interest. It's kind of what I had in mind. And I don't want to take any more time from your committee, but that was just the thought I wanted to leave.
If the committee does decide to just proceed with the legislation before us, I'd be very interested in still following up on your suggestions, Representative Collins. And we can all get together, and if the committee decides to move this on without incorporating those things, it still goes to judiciary after this and then to finance. And maybe we could do something on our own here as a committee bill. Representative Ferns?
Yes, question to Mrs. McClintock. Is it possible to draft something to address the concerns of the representative has outlined and attached as an amendment to this bill, do you think?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any kind of thing to borrow from. I would be, because I think it's a super idea, and I would certainly like to see some kind of thing get around the problem of people with the last injury exposure rule types of claims. I don't know how to go about this yet. I guess one other thing I'd like to see is to sit down with the Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee. I understand we know some members in common there. I don't know if WCCA has been discussed. Have they discussed this?
Well, I've mentioned it to several of the unions, and I've mentioned to some of the people on that committee, and ask them to get something, and nothing's really come out of it because they're having other problems. But my thought was, this was a vehicle to do it with, and I personally don't think it would take a lot. All you have to do is say 25% of this fund will be used to help those injured workers until such time as legislation is available. Because I think if we do a separate, the concern is that there's already a pool of money here. If you do a separate bill that has a fiscal note on it, it's going to be a problem. but it might be easier just to use this money that's already there. That's just kind of sitting there, right?
Yes, but I guess I have a question why there would be a fiscal note.
No, I'm saying on another bill. If we pass another bill and we establish another fund and we do all those things, there's going to be a fiscal note attached to it. We already have a fund here. An administrative fee has already been turned over to the department to work, you know, to use or administer that fund. And to me, it would be cheaper to do it with this vehicle than to do a whole other piece of legislation.
I guess the only thing I would like to get back to particularly, it's an employer's fund, you realize, the second injury fund. And I guess they should know that depending on the money coming out, it's very possible that their donation, I mean, that their contributions into the fund may go up. I don't have a problem with that if they don't. So
yeah, except that they would be reimbursing the fund so that...
That's true, but you're going to have... See, it has to be by the time of the end of a certain time of year where you figure what percentage is going to be. So however that would fall into the time that you're doing your analysis of it. Again, I think it's a good idea. I'm just not... I think we need to get together with the committee to see how we can come about.
Representative Prentice?
Mr. Chairman, a question to you and then a question to Mrs. Smith. Are you planning to move the bill out today?
I tell you the truth, with the workload we're presented with, I'm real hesitant to try to take this on as an amendment to this particular piece of legislation. I'd like to see it move its way through the committee process, but be happy to have a subcommittee or some other work on Representative Collins' proposal, because certainly it has merit.
Well, then one other question. The gentleman that does a lot of consulting to the state, first name is John, what's his name?
Lewis.
John Lewis.
Yes.
Is he on a contract for the state at this time at all, do you know?
No, nobody's under contract.
Okay. He would be a good one, too.
That's right. He is, to follow up on that, he is going to be in Anchorage, I understand, tomorrow, talking to the Workers' Compensation Committee of Alaska. Good timing.
And we're going to be working with the ad hoc committee, this newly formed ad hoc committee, on the prior piece of legislation we just considered, too, so it could all work together. Are there any further members of the public to testify? Seeing none, what's the will of the committee? Is there any further discussion?
I'd like to move up the 177 next to the referral to individual recommendation.
Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the motion passes. The last matter to come before the committee today is House Bill 182. It's the Power Cost Equalization Program. This was before the... We're just going to try to set up a subcommittee to do this, and that's going to be the meeting. It's Power Cost Equalization. We have a representative of Office of Management and Budget here today.
Yes, he's not here.
So. Okay, if we needed that, but I'd really prefer, given the complexity of the power cost equalization situation, that we appoint a subcommittee to deal with this bill, because it's quite a complex bill. I'd be happy to serve on that subcommittee. Is there anybody else who's Representative Davidson? Would you be interested?
Yes, we have to serve.
Okay. Either Representative Nott, Representative Furness?
No.
Okay, I know you're busy. Would you? Okay. And you'd like to have a working group
part because I have a prayer moment.
Okay, good. Okay, well, what I thought is tomorrow, if do any of you have a conflict tomorrow at 4:30 at our special committee time?
I'm capable of working that far ahead.
Yeah, because we do have the room reserved for Wednesdays at 4:30.
I think I can make it.
Maybe we can all get together.
I don't have my schedule right now.
Okay.
When you see me in the program, we do have a meeting tomorrow at 4, and I don't, it probably won't take that long. 4:30.
Okay, yeah. 4:30 in this room, then we'll try to get together and talk about it, hammer something out on one evening, too. And it's a better way than try to do it. Okay. Are we after that? And other than signing the one... Representative Davidson.
Do you know if there are any people here to give testimony?
Yeah, is there anybody that really needs to give testimony today on 182 that's from out of town or any special circumstances like that? And if there's anybody's interest in it, then tomorrow at 4:30 in the same room, we'll be working as a subcommittee, informal subcommittee. We'd be happy to have people participate in that flow of discussion. Well, seeing no more matters to come before the committee today, that's it. It's the shortest meeting in ARC record, I think. It's 2:25.